just listened to Power and Praise here on WEFT Champaign 9.1 FM on the dial for a brand new day.
Monkey Prairie Monk, WEFT Champaign 90.1 on your FM dial.
And Dave on the board. It is Sunday, August the 21st, 2016. And as always, the Prairie Monk is a program of local things happening in environmental issues and conservation and rails to trails and greenways and whatever else Dave has been up to in the past week.
And just remind you that there's a quad day today for students at the University of Illinois. It's open to all manner of agencies that want to proselytize students for their involvement. Thousands of people there, and WEFT is one of those agencies looking for support and student involvement. I want to do a retrospect or replay on Kickapoo Trail. It's being developed. The first phase of it is being developed between Banner and St. Joe. It's a matter of 5 miles. No, yes, about 5 or 6 miles. And it is in process. So a little bit of a history. Heartland Pathways took out the interim trail use agreement that made this trail possible. It was not possible to get the money needed to buy the line at the time of abandonment, but the interim trail use agreement with the Rail Banking Act was continued. And 20 years later, a group of active, interested, excited people and agencies put this together so that now there is a $12 million budget on 25 miles. And the first phase is between Banner and St. Joe, and that has a budget of $3 million. You may think this is important or expensive, depending on your point of view. But these facilities have to be acquired at the time of abandonment, and you don't have too much say in the matter. If you're going to do it, you have to do it, whether or not you have developed other resources. There's always the criticism of why don't you develop what you have before you do something else. But you have to think about generations for the future. So this amount of money is spread over many generations. So the per capita price is low. It's just that we have to finagle how to do it now, just because that's the happenstance of the situation. The rail bed does carry on either side of the ballast original remnant prairie. And we're down to 0.01% of the prairie that was here, and that prairie was two-thirds of the state. And that when you get down to that miserable degree of conservation, then you have to worry about your gene pool, your genetics. You have to worry about losing the ambiance and the heritage that is part of glaciation and long-range geological movements that you should know about. Apart from the fundraising for the trail itself, we also have innovative ideas. We have predated, bought a 33 miles of rail bed in the Monticello area, and that is of concern to us. The rail trail that is going in is a mechanism to help preserve railroad beds. There are now 30,000 miles of such preserved railroad beds, and the railroads have the right to come back in. The deal with the railroads is that they give enhancement money. They don't buy the line. You have to, if you're an interested party, you have to buy the line. They give you enhancement money to do the line up and develop it, and they preserve the bridges, which are normally removed, and they quiet titles, which can be a tremendous problem for contiguity of a trail. So after the farmer's market, I took a brief move out to the 6 miles. The first thing I noticed with great joy is that the little piece of prairie between Main Street and the Route 130, which is really the head of the trail at Banner End, has not been mown. I want to thank whoever has had a finger in that pie, because often mowing denies the prairie so that you don't even recognize what is there. So this will allow prairie to express itself. There's a little sign there, and it's mown around. And so help me, you have to have a neatness statement. But really, I would wish the sign was not mowed around. But that's just my preference. But I think we have to teach people that there are things other than mowing the heck out of your natural areas. And the sign needs to be big enough to make an announcement, and at the moment it's not that big. So the next step is to go to Route 130, which is on the east side of Urbana, and it's a main drag all the way through to Arcola and places like that. So it's a prominent road, and if bicycles start at Main Street, then they have to cross an intersection just near to Aldi's and Walmart. That needs attention. My next step was to go up a gentle hill and realize that this is where there are some drainage problems. The detention ponds behind Walmart run through and under the railroad bed, down along the side of it, and under Route 150, and head for the Salt Fork Creek. There is a power line that goes across, which means that power line has to be maintained, and there can't be any trees on that crossing. I have thought for having a parking lot there, so just so people can get some fairly easy access to the railroad bed. It's running parallel to Route 150, so you think you could stop on 150 and jump off and go look at the railroad bed. But there are not really a lot of parking lots where you can get off. So at this stage, when construction is underway, then there's a need for parking lot considerations. Next stop was at Cottonwood, which is a section road near where John Deere has its sales site. And it's a little on the low side, so there's a need for culverts coming off the railroad bed. So there's a gentle move down and across a drainage that comes in from some of the, probably the remnants of the Yankee Ridge Moraine. And you have to then go across the road and over another culvert and gently up to the railroad bed, which is a raised area because railroads really don't enjoy having their feet in water. You need good drainage, so the bed is high at that point. I took a look at this site because I also am worried about how you get access to the rail bed. So is the culvert that's there wide enough to take a tandem truck, a pickup truck, a fire truck, or an ambulance? Since the trail is fairly parallel to a rail bed, to a highway, you might think that you can get someone from the rail bed across to the road. Not so. It's usually a poorly drained area, and it's hard to negotiate. And so if you have a grass fire, which is not unusual, then you have to have a fire department, and fire departments invariably come with a ladder truck because that's what they have. They're usually putting out fires on buildings, so they need ladders, and they don't have a lightweight trucks to get to grass fires. We've had one of these just recently and on Route 74 where motor vehicle problems sparked a grass fire, which very shortly got into the cornfield. And if you have a harvested cornfield with a lot of trash around, You'd be amazed how many acres you can burn in a few minutes in that sort of situation. So you need access for vehicles. You need maintenance trucks that are tandem trucks. And those trucks can't access a culvert at right angles. They have to have a curvilinear situation so that they can get into the railroad bed. And they also have to be assured that the culvert has a firm base, that the shoulders will not cave in when a heavy tonnage truck enters. A bogged fire truck is not going to do you much good if you have a heart attack on the trail or you have a fire. Same goes for an ambulance truck. Same goes for a maintenance vehicle. A good rail trail has the ability for a tandem truck to move the whole of the trail. In this case, it would be 25 miles. When people were first putting in rail trails, they decided it was easy and cheap to have a crane put in a narrow, lightweight bicycle bridge. And that proved to be a problem because your maintenance truck gets to the bridge and can't go. So it has to turn around on a very narrow ballast and then go back and around by the local roads and do the same to get access to the other side of the bridge. So that sort of experience has taught people not to have a very narrow easement somewhere along the line. Sometimes people are tempted to put barriers at the roadside to prevent untoward four-wheel vehicle activities. They will commonly put a heavy concrete slab there. But the problem is that if you have a problem further up, bridge burning or trestle burning, then you need to have a backhoe on hand to remove the concrete piece while the fire trucks sit and wait. So the response for this is to have bollards. And the bollards don't necessarily have to be locked, but they can be locked, and they can be unlocked easily and allow access. Those bollards usually are placed so that bicycles and hikers can move around them without any bother at all, but four-wheel vehicles cannot. There's another thing is that we have a very wide, almost highway-style trail. And part of that is due to ADA, American Disabilities Association requirements that you need to have opportunity for wheelchairs and the like to move. Also you have a fairly disturbed trail in a way because it's you have some EPA problems with creosote leached out of railroad ties. So if you have a highway like that, well, take advantage of it and allow your ranger to drive along that trail. It's often very friendly. I've been in Wisconsin when I've encountered a ranger of that style. If they are interpretive people and they know the features that they can tell you about or advise you about, it can be a very friendly thing. But the pickup truck needs to be able to move along that 25-mile stretch. There was another aspect of some of this is I talked about parking lots. A lot of the people who are funding these sorts of projects are older, and they're not going to ever get to walk or ride this trail. In that case, I am fairly convinced that you have wide enough highway that you could put a small bus on the trail. You might be for certain pieces. It might be to alert people to certain needs. But you need accessibility, not only for hikers and bikers, but for vehicles. And if you have a wide trail like that, you can do that. I moved along to Mayview Mount Olive Cemetery Section Road. I forget its other name or its number. But there has been material put down that I think is road pack. It's not the chipped limestone that can come from Fairmont, which is not too far away, which will probably go on top. But that has been put down, probably several inches. It's got little bird baths on it because it has to be compounded with compactors, which are big rollers with sheep feet on them. They're called sheep foot, and it's a sheep foot roller. And that compaction will eventually prevent bird baths, but there is some erosion on the sides. So I also observed that it rained very recently, and there's a lot of water accumulating between the road and the railroad line. The road has been lifted up 2 feet to allow for better highway traffic when it rains. The road was low enough that it had you could have several inches of water across the road if you had 5 inches of rain. Water doesn't get away very easily and go to the Salt Fork Creek. But for us, it's a chance to have a wetland and to have wetland species. So not all bad. Yeah. Okay, the area between the road and the railroad bed, unfortunately, we lost 25 feet to road widening. That's 25 feet of the only drummer and Flanagan soil and prairie that you have left in this state, which is down to 0.01%. Rather sad, but it means that when you mow and you put roadside grasses between the road and the railroad bed, if you mow the downslope and you mow the gusset and you mow the upside, then you're going to have the mowing right up onto the railroad bed. And not much room left for any prairie there. But mowing is a control mechanism too. And I've been watching the plants coming back. Some of the deep-rooted prairie plants actually do come back on the roadside, but they're going to be mown. But the mowing has been fairly extensive and wisely because the weeds are taking over. There's a whole bunch of locust trees that would like to grow in that situation. It's halfway decently drained, so the locust trees like some freedom from raining, and they can come in along with the wild cherries and the plum trees and the crud trees, which come in quickly. There's also a lot of equisetum or horsetail. I've been watching what comes back, and through some of the deep-rooted prairie stuff will come back. In the long run, we hope that mowing will be done by small mowers so that they will only mow down to the downslope and leave the gusset and the upslope available for prairie restoration. in order to do that, we have to have some contract where we're working with mowers that are not 15 feet wide, because what happens is that the mowers don't like to have their wing flaps over the highway, and so they it's almost impossible for them to mow without being so large that they have to mow the upside as well as the downside of the area. So it takes a lot to make that conversion. Some states do it by a midnight acquisition. They remove the large tractors and bush hog mowers and return with a more narrow mower. So we're looking at that and hoping that in the future it will be a mowing on the roadside edge, because everyone feels they have to have a clean and tidy highway, but just leave enough room for the prairie to express itself. We're a little bit worried about the pH, because if you put limestone on there, you're going to change the nature of the soil. But the soil there was Drummer and Flanagan, and it would have had a fairly basic pH. It's not necessarily a highly acid soil like a podzol that might be under a forest or a pine forest. So I moved along to through Mayview, and I once again watched to see that the road cuts were fairly narrow, nothing that you could really get a 10-ton fire truck through. So I'm just wanting to go to a meeting. I think it's on the 24th. It's on Wednesday night at St. Joe, where there is a hearing for this sort of stuff, and the public is invited to be along. So we go along by Fool's Elevator, and there's a issue there as to whether how do you get the people, the movers, past an elevator so that you don't get in the way of the elevator, but so that they know enough about elevatoring to be interested in the elevator. And that continues. Alongside the trail, there is the remnants of the old McKinley interurban catenary. When the early trains, the rail bed itself would have come in probably in the late 50s or 60s. The interurbans came in with electricity around about 05, so they're more recent. And they're still there because when they were removed in the early 1950s, because cars came in and because people came back from World War I and they'd been driving tanks and vehicles, and there was a convenience of roads. So the roads got upgraded and the interurban dropped out. But the power line remains. And that power line easement has a lot of prairie on it. And so as I go past Fools, I've taken photographs of the interurban that's adjacent. The railroad bed itself is usually about 100 feet, but we've lost 25 feet of that. The interurban is about 37 feet wide. And some pieces of it are nicely preserved. A little further along, we come to a very interesting prairie. This is the sort of thing we were looking at when we first, decided to go to take out an interim trail use agreement as Heartland Pathways. There's the road, which was normally straight east and west on a Jeffersonian plat, took a little duck to the south, and that was partially, I anticipate, because there was a node. Water moves in a sigmoid manner. That means an S-shaped curve. And if you want to put in a structure and you don't want it to be eroded, then it's better to have it located at the node. The other parts of the S move out, and if you want to go swim, you will go to the edge of that S, and you'll find a nice big pool, and you'll find the water eroding the soil at that point and depositing a nice little beach on the other side. So the road moves south a little so that it can go across at the node. The interurban did the same, and the highway did the same. So the three transportation modes were all there at the node. The penchant of most people is to have nice straight roads, and they spend many years converting wiggle-woggle roads into a straight road. So the road between Pioneer Green, where this old highway goes south, then has been straightened, and there's a new concrete bridge, and it goes straight through St. Joe. On either side of that highway, 150, is the old bottomlands that fill in those S-shaped areas that have eroded and left the flatland. That beach that you might visit is part of the flatland. And those flatlands have been developed by soil and water conservation as areas that can be restored, and they are being restored, and they can be visited. The area of the old highway, it's usually, once it's retired, it is reverted from the Department of Transportation to the township supervisor or the body most likely to be in control of it in the future. It's a sort of dead-end road, dead ends at the Salt Fork with no bridge to go across. The railroad, of course, has a bridge, but the interurban bridge is gone. And there's only one or two houses that use that road. But for many years, the distance between the road and the railroad line has been murderously mown. And thanks to the initiative of the Forest Preserve working in this area, there has been no mow recently. So up come the prairie plants, and we'll give you a picture of those creatures coming into action. So there was ironweed, there was big blue stem, dock and compass plant, and milkweeds, and rosinweed, and there were butterflies and bees, and including a wanderer or a monarch butterfly. The road is still mown a little by the nearby neighbor, just about 2 feet, but it's enough to be also mowing the prairie plants that have come. And so with kindness, we have to, over the years, make sure that we do have a real no-mow policy. And even if the compost plant falls over the road, it's a road that's very seldom used, and it's not going to be invasive. My thought with that site is that we should leave it to be in fallow, more or less. Fallow is a term for a plowed field, really, but we'd like to see the prairie express itself so that it can perhaps have 1 or 2 years to show what's there. I didn't see any baptisia, or there are a number of things that I would like to see, and I assume they're there because at this time of the year you only get to see what's flowering at this time of the year. I walked quite a bit of it to double check. Found fireweed and other things, and nice little prairies that obviously haven't ever been disturbed. Between a section road just west of Pioneer Grain on the other side of the road and the river. So I was very pleased with that, and I think other people are too, but I would put a reserve on dipsy-doodling seed into it yet, because we don't know quite what's there, and it might take a year or two to document what is there. There are invasive olive trees which are universal, and they should be removed because every bit of shade takes out the prairie. The prairie struggles. There are some trees have been left, and I know why, because people love to hack a tree, and it may be an informal toilet at one stage. And there's still a fair few trees on that little, probably about a half-mile corridor. It has a drainage problem. The farmer next door actually dug up the railroad bed without really getting permission to do that. So there's been some temporary drains put in there, but there are some huge drains sitting alongside, which I anticipate eventually the trail will be opened up again, and a large drain will be put in there so that there is no drainage problem. The trail moves down a little bit, which is okay. Rail trails don't have a lot of challenge. They are usually fairly flat, and they don't run around corners very easily. So a little bit of variety doesn't hurt, and if a railroad whatever wants to come back in as it can, they would sort out the terrain so that it was very level. There is a pile of trees that have been removed in the past, and I would suggest that those trees not be burned. It's very, very tempting to burn 100 yards of trees. But what that does is you have a bonfire, and you sterilize the soil underneath the trees. Interestingly, the dock and plants like that are coming up through the dead trees. I would suggest that those trees be removed to a different site. And if they're burned, burn elsewhere, or just allowed to decompose. Sometimes they can be habitat for creatures, so it might be you do put a few trees here and there that are dead that allow a snake or a spider or an insect to have a home. So pretty exciting, that part. Now, the bridge. We spent a lot of time with the bridge. The bridge is kind of a challenge to people who are not used to heights. It's not that high, but there's a space about 9 inches between each tie. And each tie has a block of about 10 inches long between each tie to hold that tie, to stop the ties from moving east and west. So you have to take out those ties, and we would replace them with railroad ties so that people would have be able to walk across and not freak out. Some people have taken advantage of that and had their barbecue on the trail, and that set fire to some things, which is a real danger for a tree. That's a fairly new bridge. It's a steel bridge, and if you burn a steel bridge, it buckles and you have to replace the whole bridge, whereas if you have a wooden bridge, you can replace pieces of it. So I was interested in what's happening there. Nothing has happened yet. The approaches have been worked with a bulldozer, so and there are a few problems you have to watch. There's a cutoff. The old sigmoid S-shaped curve meander, which comes down from the north, has been cut off so that the water escapes quickly so farmers could farm, and that's been happening for the best part of six generations. So the cutoff brings wood and other things to the bridge, and so you have to watch that the pylons don't cave into a trash that's in the river. The river was a little high. If it's low, you can actually see the fish moving in the river. It's kind of healthy. If it's recent rain, it's muddy, and it's taking a lot of silt down the river to the Wabash and to the Ohio and into the Mississippi and into the Gulf of Mexico, where you have hypoxia or an ecology that's sick because of the amount of nitrogen and phosphorus that gets there. Okay. That cutoff tends to bring down wood, and sometimes you actually have to take some dynamite and get rid of that wood, because if it accumulates, it can take your bridge out. The bridge will be manicured with or installed with a bridge on top of a bridge. Usually comes in pieces that are prefabricated and has a fence on it. I hope, like crazy, that the sides of those bridges are safe, but so that you can see through them. Often they use a sort of netting that is the sort of netting that you put around your backyard so that you can see the nearby bottomlands and there's those that agriculture that used to be on the bottomlands, but it's now a conservation area because it's sort of too wet for agriculture and you don't get a good crop. There's also an old road that's just on the other side of the bridge. And that road could be an access to those bottomlands and teaching about the nature of hydrology or how water moves and what it leaves where and where the alluvium is and how you can utilize the alluvium, which is different from a regular soil. That road is still there. There's a scrapper uses it as an area because he has adjacent land. But I'd like to look at that in the future. The St. Joseph Township has sheds there, and they put a lot of their soil on the right-of-way. As far as my memory is concerned, the railroad bed is 100 feet wide at that place, and as far as I can see, the distance between the center of the rail and the edge of the accumulated gravel and other storage items is less than 25 feet. So someone has to look at who owns what and where. The trail goes into the main street of St. Joe, right alongside B.J. The mayor is commonly known as B.J. He has a salon very near the roundabout, but it's very logical that the trail, this phase of the trail, end at that point. The soil has been removed, ready for putting in material like chip limestone, but it might be that in the town they'll put in asphalt at that location. Go a little bit further, and you're getting open space, and it's very tempting for adjacent businesses to want to acquire that. Usually there's an elevator, usually there's a widening of the rail bed to take two or three lines, and so there's open space there, which is currently mown, and it's very tempting to think that that could be occupied by buildings. But it's a nice place for having a kiosk and interpretive center. So I don't think that has happened yet, and I don't think it's likely to happen. Go to the east edge of St. Joe and 7th Street, and there is volunteer mowing between the road and the railroad bed almost for a mile from 7th Street right through to the Glover, which is where the Union Pacific comes through with the railroad line. That has been in the past a rather beautiful prairie. It's being mown not just with a bush hog, but with a lawnmower. And that is rather sad. So I looked at that and I took photographs, and I took photographs of the remaining prairie that's there so that we can perhaps do something about that. It's a long, slow process. Mowing is in people's minds, and to have an unmown territory is to have a fear of snakes and crocodiles and alligators and giraffes and elephants. It's just we need to do a lot of educating, so people need to know and that's to understand and appreciate a thing like a compass plant or a dock or more rare species like a hyacinth or something like a yellow coneflower or a monada or a bee balm. And it started to rain on me, so I moved out of there. But there's one more thing that I'd like to say about that. The next phase, maybe, between St. Joe and Ogden. And the road that is to the north of the railroad line moves up and over a large bridge which brings the road down on the south side of the railroad line. That bridge is a fairly recent bridge. Unfortunately, a train, I think it was, hit the stanchion and part of the bridge caved in, and vehicles that were coming along fell down 4 feet. So there was a little bit of a problem there. So there's a fairly recent bridge there, but I've been looking at it and wondering if bicycles could take off the railroad bed and go up and over this rather huge concrete bridge. It's not necessarily a concrete bridge. The surface is concrete, but the underpinnings are steel. And I'm thinking you could put weld extensions to have a bicycle way on one or other side of the bridge. But there's another thing to think about. When you go up and over the Union Pacific, we don't have a lot of features. But you have to think about railroading. You have to think about the possibility of three railroads there. There's two railroads at the moment. But there's something nice about going up and over the railroad and under the road. And so there's an experience there that I think would tend to suggest that we put a bridge up and over and under the road bridge so that you can enjoy that sight and move on. And that means you don't have to get off the railroad bed and move on to the road and do something about the side of the road and may do something about the bridge. So I'm sort of changing my feeling about what you do with that bridge at Glover. So I'm looking at my notes here.
10 minutes.
Got a lot of things to do this morning. I think we've got through a lot of the things that I was likely to talk about. Yeah, I think that gets me for the kick up your trail. Think about this, that everything we do here has its counterpart in the Heartland Pathways trails in the Monticello area. So we're working it. This week, there was an agronomy day. If you haven't been to agronomy day, it is on South Neal Street, South First Street. Go about 3 miles south of the, or perhaps 2 miles south of the State Farm Center, which is the old assembly hall. And the university has acquired 8 square miles of land to the south so that the agronomy farms have moved south past Curtis Road to they're on First Street, so they've moved their agronomy day from agronomy buildings that are over more towards an area between 4th Street and Lincoln Avenue. It's on St. Mary's Road, so that's where the traditional agronomy day has been. They put farmers and yourselves or whoever wants to go on little go-karts, and you go to stations and you learn about what's happening with rootworm or with certain varieties of plants, whether they're GMO or not. And it's a rather exciting day. And there are speeches, and there's a huge tent with a lot of exhibitors who have stories that may be academic or be pragmatic. And there's quite a bit of equipment sitting around that you can examine. So Agronomy Day comes once each year at this time of the year. And it's usually from 7 o'clock to 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock. This Taste of Champagne was on this week. It's not on today. It finished last night. I hope they survived the small rains. But many years ago, six of us got together and we had an art in the park. And that gradually morphed into quite a large art show. But then food came along, and beer came along, and eventually it got to be a taste of champagne. And the juried artists didn't really like that, so most of the artists that come, not all, but most of the artists that come now are craft-type artists. You're not going to get a juried artist from Indianapolis or someone to spend 2 days getting here. It's not the sort of population that is interested in art. So with that realization, the Park District has an art show which closes Neal Street, so you have the artists there. It's a little disappointing that the artists have had to move from the park where you can have children and you can wander around and enjoy the West Side Park. I'm not sure when the art show is, but it will be shortly, and it will block off Neal Street from Main Street through to University Avenue, and it's very friendly, despite the fact that it's in an urban setting. The urban setting may be an advantage for art. On the other hand, I tend to think the ambiance is nice in the park. You still have to watch. We've had experience of being under a tree, and the tree has gutation pores that leak a little bit of sugary water, and that falls upon your artwork. So you have to have a tent, and there were many tents. And not always is it easy. Rain can come and storms can come, and they can flatten tents if they're too severe. The Park District does have bollards for entrance of Park District vehicles and of exhibitor vehicles. And so there's food lined up in one direction and the non-profit organizations in another. And so I think we have an organization that's doing very well. And they do it so that they can restore little glitches in lawns that get damaged as a result of these activities. A lot of work there, and a compliment to the Park District for doing what it does. We sort of have a friendly memory of what we were doing in the first place, and probably wasn't in the first place because that park has been in action probably since the 1860s, and I'm sure there were other occasions when art and music and design and whatnot have been in that location. Remember again, Quad Day, 1 to 4. You could well do to speak for WEFT as a radio station at that situation. So just you're wandering around and talking to people and perhaps giving out a flyer would be helpful. So I think we're nearing the end of our opportunity to speak. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to think that people are out there being interested, go look at the trail. Go say what you think on Wednesday night at the St. Joe City Building. And if you have any questions, call me at 351-1911, 351-1911, or 840-1911. And my email is monkdavid0@gmail.com, monkdavid0@gmail.com. And I hear my watch go off. It's reached noon. The hour.
Oh, he didn't even say it. I'll say it for him. That was Dave Monk, your Prairie Monk. This is the end of the Prairie Monk for another week. I'm Dave on the board. As always, the views and opinions expressed here are solely those of the speakers and no one else. I'll mention one more time. I've mentioned over the last couple of weeks that Clark Street has been under repair with signs up saying don't park here and things like that. It's completely done. Yay! So Clark Street is back available, not just for people to park those clunky old fruit-a-do cars all over the place, but bicyclists can enjoy it now too from all the way from Russell Street all